The following talk was given by Steve Matushak at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on February 3, 2019. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's nice to see you all here, and we know what today is, of course. It's International Golden Retriever Day. So happy International Golden Retriever Day to you all. And I do also want to apologize on a much more minor note to those I was speaking with on Friday, some friends, and I said that one of the teams in the Super Bowl today was the Buffalo Bills. One of the teams playing today in the Super Bowl is not the Buffalo Bills. I confused them with the New England Patriots. I don't know if that's a big confusion. To me, they're in the same region, and they have red, white, and blue uniforms. So that's as deeply as my football knowledge goes. So I apologize if you were confused, saying, but Steve said it was the Buffalo Bills. It's the Patriots. And maybe that's a good lead into my talk, because my talk today is called As in a Dream. So perhaps you were dreaming of a Super Bowl that had the Buffalo Bills in it, and you were surprised that they were even in the Super Bowl. As in a dream, this talk came to me when I was working on some of the class posters for Dharma Field. And I don't know if you notice, but on the class posters, usually at the top of the poster, that's usually where I try to put it, it says, wake up. Every one of our class posters says, wake up on it. And I partly started doing that because there was a meeting here a couple years ago where we were talking about Dharma Field's mission statement, if you will. It was about our mission statement, what's online. And I was reminded by Scott Edelstein, a longtime member here, that we used to put wake up on all of our posters before. So I thought I'd start putting wake up on there, because what we're doing here at Dharma Field is we want to help you to wake up. Of course, we can't wake you up, right? We can just help you with our teachings and our practice. But as I was putting wake up on the posters again, I couldn't help but think, well, this is interesting, because what is it we're waking up from? It seemed like a pretty good question. We are taught, we've heard the teaching here, you are Buddha. Or you could think of it, Buddha is you. That Buddha, that phrase is talking about, that's reality. That's enlightenment. That's awareness. That is you. That is your original nature. So what is it we're waking up from? That? And I think that's a good question. There is a koan in the Blue Cliff Record that has the word dream in it, and I think helps point to what it is that we're waking up from. The koan is case number 40, and its title is Nanchuan's It's Like a Dream. And as with all koans, or most koans, it's pretty brief. So I'll read to you the koan, and then I'll talk to you about the koan, and hopefully we'll at least see a little bit more of what that little phrase, wake up, what that's pointing to. So it's like a dream. As the officer Lu Xuan was talking with Nanchuan, he said, Master of the teachings Chao said, Heaven, earth, and I have the same root. Myriad things and I are one body. This is quite marvelous. Nanchuan pointed to a flower in the garden. He called to the officer and said, People today see this flower as in a dream. So what I'm going to do in my talk today is I'm going to start with Nanchuan's final teaching there. People today see this flower as in a dream. I'm going to start there, and then I'm going to come back to that phrase again at the end of my talk. Before I do that, though, I'm looking around just to see how many new faces I see, because koans are these odd things. And if you don't, if you're not practicing Zen, you may not even know what a koan is. And if you do practice Zen, you may have ideas about what a koan is. And if you don't practice Zen, you may have ideas about what koans are as well. So just very briefly, koans are Zen teachings that point directly at reality. And they tend to confound reason. They tend to confound rational thought. You've probably heard, those of you who don't know Zen too well may have heard of some koans like, what's the sound of one hand clapping? Or if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there, does it make a sound? Or whatever that koan, however we understand it. We see those in pop culture. I think that one about the sound of one hand clapping I heard in The Simpsons once as Bart was learning how to be a master putt-putt golf player. And Lisa was teaching him that to do it, he had to let go of wanting to be the master of putt-putt golf. So she taught him a little bit of Zen by offering him the koan, what is the sound of one hand clapping? And then Bart said, well, that's easy. But then Lisa helped him to see that that's not a koan. Koans aren't like that. They're not solvable rationally. They're not intended to confound rationality. And I think sometimes when people talk about them, they talk about koans as if they're written in such a way to make you go, I can't think straight when I read this. That's not their intention. They actually are just pointing directly at reality. Reality cannot be understood rationally. So as we take that koan and we try to figure out what's going on, we're doing what it is we do out in the world. We try to understand rationally reality. And with the koan, you're just immediately aware of the fact that that is not a very useful way to approach reality, that it actually confuses you more than it helps matters. So in that way, it confounds the rational mind. Koans simply point to direct experience of here-now reality. So that's how koans function. The second thing I wanted to do is quickly talk about the, I didn't know what to call them, characters in the koan. I mean, they're hardly characters, they're figures. And the first is that officer, Lu Xuan. And he apparently must have been an important person of his time. He was the inspector of Sichuan. And that sounds like that's pretty important. And he was also a member of the Supreme Court. I don't really know what the Supreme Court was that he was a member of, but you can see that he was a high official in the secular world. He was also a longtime student of Nanchuan. So by the time he's reading this passage, he's not really reading, he's citing this passage to Nanchuan in this particular koan, he's already been studying with Nanchuan for a while. And what it is that Lu Xuan was studying at the time that he was talking to Nanchuan were the discourses of Seng Chao. And it's a book that the title of which I've seen in two different translations. It's interesting, I have two books. This koan is also in a collection of koans called the Book of Serenity. And the two translations I have are from Thomas Cleary, and they're not the same. They're different. It's kind of surprising to see. So he actually has two different translations for this particular collection of discourses of Seng Chao. One of them is just Discourses of Chao, and the other is Nirvana Has No Name. And I like that title. But this is what Lu Xuan, Officer Lu Xuan, was studying at the time that he was talking to Nanchuan about this particular passage. And this book, The Discourses of Chao, or Nirvana Has No Name, this was a very important collection of discourses at this time. There are some stories around how people who were studying The Discourses of Chao woke up upon reading passages from this book. And one of them is Shi To. We may recognize that name, as Shi To is the author of The Merging of Difference and Unity. And Shi To purportedly had a great awakening experience upon reading some passages from the Discourse of Chao. So that's what Lu Xuan is referring to in this koan, is a passage from that collection. Then we have Nanchuan. He's the teacher. His Japanese name is Nansen. You may know that name better than Nanchuan. And he was one of the great Tang Dynasty Zen masters, or Chan masters. Very important figure. He figures in a number of very important koans, of which this is one. He was a student of Basso. You may have heard of Basso as well. Basso, another one of the great Zen masters of this time. And Nanchuan had 17 Dharma heirs, which is a lot. 17 Dharma heirs, one of whom was Joshu, another name we know, one of the great Zen masters of this time as well. And we know Joshu perhaps from that koan, another koan, does a dog have Buddha nature? And Joshu answers mu, not M-O-O, but M-U, mu. It's a very well-known koan. And it's the start of the well-known koan collection, the Gateless Gate. And I'll actually be talking about that in a course I'll be teaching this spring called Right Where You Are, The Teachings of the Gateless Gate. So Nanchuan is no slouch, but usually these teachers in the koans aren't minor figures. They're usually pretty important teachers. So again, to get back to the koan itself, I wanted to get to that Nanchuan at the end, pointing to a flower in the garden, and he said to Lu Xuan, people today see this flower as in a dream. So what does Nanchuan mean by that? It's an interesting phrase, and I think what he means by that, almost ironically, is that people see the flower, I didn't know how else to put this, but I think it's kind of like this. They take the flower as being real. I'm putting that in quotation marks. So what I mean by that is when they see that flower, they see something that's there, that is there, that is lasting, even if ephemerally, but that right now, perhaps in this little brief window of life that it has, is right there. It's something that's there that's separate, that's there that has substance to it. So it's real in that way that we frequently tend to take the world as being real. That is, that it has substance to it, that these things have solidity, that they exist, that they are here. If not for a brief period of time, there's something like the rock for a long time, but they're here. And when those things do change, when the things that we take to have substance that are here, really here, we can see it, touch it, hear it, whatever it is we can do, it's here. When it passes away, there's a sense of uneasiness. And maybe we even get a little taste then that things aren't really the way that we think they are. They don't have the substance that we think they are, and we glimpse something in that. I was reminded as I was writing this of a phrase from The Tempest, William Shakespeare's The Tempest. And it's a speech that Prospero gives at the end of the play. And if you don't know The Tempest, very briefly, Prospero is a magician and he lives pretty much alone on an island with his daughter and a miscreant and some sprites, basically. And he brings some people to his island to correct some wrongs that had been done to him a long time ago. So he brings them to his island, and he's speaking now to his daughter and one of the survivors of this shipwreck, actually. Somebody, he brought people to the island by wrecking their ship on his island. And he's saying, these are actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits and are melted into air, into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherit, shall dissolve, and like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. Particularly that last little passage there, that's what people know. But what Prosper is talking about, there are a number of dimensions of theater that occur in The Tempest. To me, it's one of the things that makes Shakespeare so brilliant, is his understanding of what theater could help us to see about how we understand and move about in the world. And so his plays are often quite theatrical in that they highlight their theatrical nature, and The Tempest is no different from that. So in The Tempest we have, there's a pageant that the spirits put on at one point. There is the staging of what's happening to the shipwreck survivors that Prospero manipulates over the course of the play. Then there's actually the fact that The Tempest is a play that's taking place, and Shakespeare would kind of point to that with his action. So when we have Prospero delivering this monologue, think you're an audience member, and he's talking about these actors. And we know how actors work. They get up, they take on a role. They're Hamlet for however long the production of Hamlet is, 2.5 to 4 hours long, depending on how much editing was done to the production. But at the end of that 4 hours, where does Hamlet go? Where was Hamlet? And so we have Prospero saying, our actors, as I foretold you, we're all spirits and are melted into air, into thin air. Our actors, we are actors. Of course, you know that other famous Shakespeare passage, that we are actors, merely actors upon a stage. I don't know this one by heart, but strutting on the stage. I'll just leave it at that. Greater poetry from Shakespeare. But we know that we're actors. We are actors in this world. And he doesn't necessarily mean it, or we don't have to necessarily take it as the fact that we're playing a part. Sometimes we do. Sometimes we do. And often we don't even think we're playing a part. We may be playing the part of Steve Matushak. What does that mean? All right, I'm going to do that now. And maybe some people say, this is Steve Matushak, this is how you behave, and then you find yourself, even if you're resisting it, performing that part for them. So what are we? Where did Hamlet go? Where did that person go? Where does that person go? And more so, Prospero gets to just talking about the sets of what it is we do when we see a play. Somebody might put a little flat up behind some actors and paint it on it as maybe not such a great-looking castle. And there it is. That's our cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces. Because what we do as audience members is we see, we know what that signifies, and we see the cloud-capped towers there. We see the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself. I don't know if you're aware, but Shakespeare's theater was the globe. So he's pointing to his own theater as well as the earth itself. All of these things, he's talking about these solid images that in a theater have no substance at all. And now we take that outside of the theater and these cloud-capped towers that seem so immense and they seem so everlasting, like they'll never go away. The gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, this earth, shall dissolve. And like this insubstantial pageant, again, this act of theater, faded, not leave a wreck behind. And that wreck he's talking about, like a wreck, not any trace of it, no puff of smoke. We are such stuff. These appearances that we give such solidity to, we are such stuff as dreams are made on. And what is that dream now? It's that dream we have that, again, is just like what an audience member does when they see those paltry sets and they transform them, dreaming, an awakening dreaming, they transform them into these cloud-capped towers and gorgeous palaces. And that's what we do. We take this insubstantial pageant, and we dream of its solidity, and we act out of that. Now, Prospero, I don't want to say that he's a Zen master, because we have his little thing about our life. He goes, our little life. So he's pointing out that we're here for a little while, and then that little life is rounded with sleep, sleep on one side, sleep on the other. So he still has a little bit of substantiality, but he's aware of it's passing. He's aware of that. He's helping us to see. We can get that glimpse of what we take to be substantial isn't really what we take it to be. That's a dream we have of the world. That's what we're waking up from. That's what we wake up from. As we move about in that dream, we take this world to have a substance it does not have, to have a reality that it does not have. And I just put that in quotation marks because it's that reality of things existing, of them being here for a while. So in that dream, we fail to see what Lu Xuan admires in Seng Xiao's teaching. So remember the passage he points out, heaven, earth, and I have the same root. Myriad things and I are one body. Heaven, earth, and I have the same root. Heaven and earth. Well, what is heaven? All kinds of things you could say heaven is. People have all kinds of ideas of that. But one thing we can say about heaven, our conceptions of heaven, is that it's something that doesn't seem to have a beginning or an end. It's something that's eternal. It's a place that's eternal. It's not this muddied world. It's not mortal. It's not rounded by sleep. That's heaven. And earth, in a way, is not heaven. It's this earthly realm. It's what seems to have a beginning and an end, what seems to be rounded by sleep, this little passage that we have. It is muddy. It's a muddy world. Somebody told me they were just in India kind of recently, and they were really stressed out because as they were telling it was a person I had met for the first time, and she was telling the mutual friend we had, she said, you know, I'm a neat freak. And India was just too dirty for her. This is a muddy world. That's earth. Heaven and earth. The eternal, the pristine, not muddied, the immortal and the mortal. The muddied world. And I. This I that we seem to separate from all of that, have the same root. We all come from the same thing. Myriad things, he says. So all the things that we encounter in our life, and those things can be experiences, emotions, thoughts, they can be objects. These myriad things and I are one body. Same root, one body. We can give other words to it. Reality, the one mind. Dharma, the true self. We have words that point to it, but we cannot explain what it is. We can't explain it. We can know it, and we do know it. That's what it is we're experiencing, is this, that myriad things and I are one body. That's actually what we experience all the time. But when we try to think through that, it doesn't make any sense. And we're back to as if we're encountering a koan and we're lost in confusion again. It confounds intellectual understanding. So if we see what it is that Seng Chao is pointing out, that heaven, earth, and I have the same root, myriad things and I are one body. Think about this. This is to see, to really understand deep in your heart that there's no separation in the world. And in seeing this, we are going to act differently. We'll act in a way that's not predicated on separation. It's to see that when I do that, when I do this, I guess, that arises. There's no separation. We'll separate things out and we think, well, I can do this and it's not going to have any consequence. But everything we do, it's all comes together. So to realize what Tseng Chao is pointing out is to see that no thing is apart from any other thing, and that everything that you see, that's the entire universe showing up as that. When I say see, it doesn't have to be see. It's any thing that we encounter. Again, it could be a feeling, could be a thought. But whatever it is you encounter, that's why I know I've said this before on a Sunday talk, but when I give meditation instruction, I talk about how we bow to our cushions. We're actually saying hello to the whole universe, the whole universe showing up as that cushion. We're greeting that. So we see, if we see what it is, Tseng Chao is pointing out, that everything is me, no separation. And we know this. We know this. We overlook it. We get caught up in our dreams. But when we wake up from that dream, when we get a glimpse, it actually speaks to us because we already know this. So to wake up then is to come back to what we know. That's what that wake up is. Wake up. We're dreaming. It's good to be reminded of that. Reality will remind us of that if we're dreaming. Sometimes brusquely, but we'll be reminded. So just come back to what it is we know. That's to wake up. Now I want to look at what it is that Nan Chuan's pointing to the flower and seeing people today see this flower as in a dream could also be showing us, which is that it's easy to get caught up and wake up as well. So putting wake up on these posters, and it could seem like this special thing. Now I have to wake up. In order to act in this world or to act right or properly in this world, I have to wake up. First, it's this arduous thing. I'm not awake right now, and I'm never going to be awake. And we don't want to do that. We're making too much out of it, too much out of wake up. And I think that's what Nan Chuan sees Lu Xuan is doing. Because if you remember what he says is, he doesn't just point to the teaching of Chao. He doesn't just say, Master of the teachings, Chao said, heaven, earth, and I have the same root. Myriad things and I are one body. He then adds, this is quite marvelous. This is quite marvelous. That's really a wonderful word, marvelous is. It's something to marvel at. It's something special, something miraculous. And in a way, what Nan Chuan is pointing to us, in a way it is. Because we overlook it, and when we come back to it, it's refreshing. It's just refreshing to come back to this pure, direct experience. And it can seem marvelous, but we don't want to get stuck in that marvelous. We'll make something of that. We'll have that experience, and then we want to etch in our minds the moment at which we've had it so that we can share it with others. Have you had those experiences? Perhaps you're in the wilderness, or in the wild. For me, I have those experiences in that kind of situation where I glimpse something. And I don't know what it is. It was certainly before I took up this practice. I didn't know what it was I was glimpsing, but I know something happened. And I still remember the day that, and it's not that unusual, but it was like that. When I saw a deer in the woods, we'd seen its hoof prints in the earth. But I didn't think I'd see it. I turned and there was a buck standing, looking right at me. Couldn't have been more than about 8 or 10 feet away. And there was just this presence. Just this presence. And there I was, like, memorizing what was happening, a snapshot, so I could tell people about this marvelous moment. And you make too much of it. And then you let go of the fact that that's happening right here, right now. Because now we're looking for the marvelous moment. And really what we're seeing right there is actually what's taking place always. It's what's here now. We just are aware of it. We are coming back to what it is we're experiencing, what it is we know. But if we insist on saying that it's special, suddenly what is taking place right here, which is that, doesn't seem like it's that. And it seems like we have to go looking for that marvelous experience. And there's a dark side or a flip side to this as well. If we make something out of this direct experience we're having, if you think about, for example, what Prospero is helping us to see, that our dream is that we think this world is substantial, so to taste impermanence, we might think that's some big deal, some insight, a difficult truth that we are not facing, that we have to face. When in reality, impermanence is just what's taking place right now. We just wake up to that. It's nothing scary. It's nothing big. But if we make it marvelous, if we make it something special, then it becomes this truth that we have to grapple with and wrestle with. No, it's what's happening right now. Just pay attention. Just come back to this. So it can actually be dangerous, or at least an impediment, to make something marvelous of just this experience we're having. It could even be that, as I was looking over this passage, that Lu Xuan is doing something even a little different from that. He could be taking it a step further. Because actually, when I looked back at it, I couldn't really tell. Is he talking about this is quite marvelous, what it is that Lu Xuan is pointing to? Or is he talking about Lu Xuan's teaching itself? Because what he says is, Master of the teachings, Chao said, Heaven, earth, and I have the same root. Myriad things and I are one body. This is quite marvelous. He could be talking about that teaching. And I think there's a tendency, we've all had that experience. There are teachers whose teachings we maybe really sing to us. And we talk about this in our study group on Thursday morning, that perhaps when you're reading one of these teachers and they're pointing to reality and we get a glimpse, and then we credit the teaching for some feeling we may have had, some sense of something marvelous. Again, just coming back to now, and then we go, oh, that's Steve Hagen. He really said it absolutely right. Because you felt something. And it's not even necessarily problematic that there's a teacher whose teachings sing to you. Now keep reading those teachings. But don't hang on to the teachings. The teacher doesn't want you to do that. They're just pointing to reality. Know that what you're tasting is waking up. You're coming back to what's here now. It could also be that Lu Xuan is just repeating what he's heard about the teachings. Because as I was sort of looking at, I don't remember what I was looking at. Oh, I know, it's the last thing I'll be reading today. I saw the word marvelous come up in a teaching, it was a sermon, one of the Buddhist sermons. The word marvelous came up. And it could be that Lu Xuan knows that this is a marvelous teaching, because he knows this is pointing to reality and that reality is marvelous, that Dharma is marvelous. And so it could just be repeating. But regardless of what it is that Lu Xuan is confusing, whether he's making too much of just this, whether he's making too much of a teaching that points to it by declaring it marvelous, or whether he's just repeating exact phrasing that he's encountered in previous teachings, he's still getting caught up. Still getting caught up in his ideas, or we could say his dreams of what's taking place. So Nan Chuan just gently brings Lu Xuan back. He just gently does it. How does he do it? He points at a flower. And he calls to Lu Xuan, he points at a flower. And this, to me, immediately recalled to mind the Buddha's flower sermon. And the Buddha's flower sermon was the sermon where his students were gathered around and the Buddha held up a single white flower. And then one of his students, Mahakashyapa, smiled. And after smiling, then the Buddha replied, "I possess the true Dharma eye, the," and here's where that word marvelous was, "the marvelous mind of Nirvana, the true form of the formless, the subtle Dharma gate that does not rest on words or letters, but is a special transmission outside of the scriptures. This I entrust to Mahakashyapa." So I feel like Nanchuan is going back to that. That teaching between Buddha and Mahakashyapa, that was just Buddha pointing to direct experience, and Mahakashyapa understood that. Not intellectually, but understood it. Saw what the Buddha was teaching. Nanchuan pointing at that flower. And then, as with the Buddha, who offers some words that point again to what it is that's being pointed to, just pointing at that flower, Nanchuan says, "People today see this flower as in a dream. So if it's possible that we could see Lu Xuan as making something of that teaching." He's doing the same thing we do when we go around the world, making something of whatever it is that we're making something out of. And he's just helping Lu Xuan see. Some people see this flower as in a dream, they make something of it. You can do that with the teachings, you can do that with waking up as well. And then you're dreaming, and then you just need to wake up. And all waking up again, remember, is just a gentle, it's just coming back to what it is we already know. That's all it is. Just come back to this. So no barrier, or to quote the title of the koan collection I'll be talking about again this spring, a gateless gate. Gateless gate. We're already here. No impediment, no barrier. We just wake up. Just by waking up to the dream we live out of so frequently and coming back to this direct experience. Well, that's the end of my talk. If you have any questions or comments you would like to add, I welcome them. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.